right, everybody. We're going to have a conversation with Gary Hunt. Mr. Gary Hunt, he was a professional land surveyor, having been the county surveyor for Orange County, Florida, from 1974 to 1978. And then private practice in 78 and continued as such until 93, when events in Waco, Texas caused him to leave his business in pursuit of restoring the Constitution. In 1989, he began researching, investigating, and studying history, law, and events where the government was pointing its guns in the wrong direction. That's a quote. He began publishing a patriot newspaper, Outpost of Freedom, in February 1993. Since then, he has investigated numerous occurrences, including Waco, the murder of Michael Hill, Ohio militia chaplain, Oklahoma City bombing, and other events. I take it Michael Hill was the Ohio militia chaplain. I'll get a clarification in a minute.
Yes.
He has attended the sites to investigate these events. He's reported on his investigations and has continued to report on his findings over the internet, as well as write articles about other current events, about the history of the Revolutionary Era and the founding documents. His internet homepage is outpostoffreedom.com. Put dashes between the words, outpost-of-freedom.com. And here he is, Gary Hunt. Good to have you with us, sir. Thanks for making the time.
Good to be here.
So you are up in beautiful Northern California. That is a spectacular part of the world. It really is.
It's nice up here. I'd like to get out, but I will sooner or later.
What would motivate a man to leave his business to go full-time into the work that you do now?
Well, it began in 1981. I had my own survey business at the time. It was relatively small, and I had a loss of $25,000. $12,000 got filed bankruptcy and then skipped the state, and the $13,000 was an attorney that said try and collect it. And so I stopped making the payroll deposits, and the IRS decided to clamp down on me. They seized my bank account, put handcuffs on the door of my office, and that was about the time that Chrysler in New York got bailed out with low-interest government-insured loans. And I asked them about a government-guaranteed low-interest loan, and they said, talk to your banker. Well, they just seized my bank account, so my bank wasn't going to loan me a darn thing. So that got me involved in what constituted the primary patriot community at the time, which is people that are Irwin Schiff, a number of people that have serious problems with the Internal Revenue Service. And so, you know, I dug myself out of that hole, but it just bothered me. I'd fought for my country. I volunteered for the service. I served in Vietnam, and I believed in my country, and things weren't right. They were just uncooperative. For example, I was supposed to have a check to them every Monday morning. And one of them got mailed on Friday, and it wasn't going to get there on Monday. So I called them and said, it might be a day late. And they said, well, you better get another check down here. I said, I'll get one down there. And I sent somebody down with the check. And I said, please don't cash both checks. I don't have enough in the bank to cover it. So they cashed both checks. And, they're intolerant. I don't know, they remind me of the King's crew when they just abused the people. And so that led me into eventually starting to do a lot of reading and studying. And as you said, in February of 1993, before Waco, I'd put out two editions of the Outpost of Freedom newspaper. It was a tabloid size. And that was this. We're back in the fax days and the telephone conferencing days. There was a group called Council for Domestic Relations, and some of the players are still around, but I had been on a few conference calls with them, and when Waco came up, I made arrangements to go to Waco. I went there on March 5th, but what had happened is Simonette called me Sunday late morning. He was from Texas, and he said, have you heard what happened in Waco? And I said, no, and he said, well, apparently they've raided a church there and some people have been killed. And he referred me to a television station in Dallas, Texas. So I called that station and the guy said, I said, what's going on there? And he said, well, we're real busy right now, but I'll read you, what's going out on the air. And during the course of him reading that, he mentioned excuse me, mentioned a cult and a compound, and you know, these are kind of key words. When the government uses those, you know that they're probably lying. So I decided it's worth investigating and decided to go out there. We had a conference call and we were looking at what we called a peaceful intervention. And we're, the CDR promised to get 1,500 people down there. They never showed up, but the idea was to get between the BATF and the people inside just to march in and create a human barrier and calm things down. It had turned into a standoff. I ended up, I thought I was going to be there 4 or 5 days. I ended up staying until April 21st, 2 days after the fire. And when I got back to Florida, I went back to work and kept getting phone calls. People wanted me to come and talk about what happened in Waco. So I was getting calls all over the country. And so I kind of felt that Civil War number two was going to break out pretty soon over what happened because of the outrage. And so I decided the best thing I could do would be go around the country speaking about Waco. So I left my business in the hands of Wayne. He was kind of the senior guy there and stayed in phone contact with him, but he let the business fail. And so it just fell apart. I made up all my obligations to any clients that were outstanding in a few trips back, but ended up traveling the country for the next year and a half until early 1995, when I was running out of money. I'd spent my savings and had to go back to work, and got a job in Phoenix, Arizona. And being a professional land surveyor, it was easy to get a good job that paid well. But that was the beginning of this whole thing. That was the nut that that broke and caused me to just abandon the business and continue the fight.
You know, it's really strange. In the same way that so many people fall for the for what comes over mainstream media, because no matter how ridiculous it is, no matter how poorly constructed the sentences, no matter how poorly constructed the stories, people seem to, they react to this, in my opinion, imaginary credibility of mainstream media, because, you know, they're all wearing suits and they've got an expensive apparatus, so, I mean, there must be some sort of substance to it, right? And then they talk right. But then again, when they sometimes, and that's why we have this program, because then when a man like you comes on, he goes, look, I'm a regular guy. I volunteered for service. You know, I went to Vietnam. I started a landscaping company, had some problems, got no help, got no cooperation. It's like, oh, yeah, I see. Oh, well, so you're not the scrubbed, rubbed, tubbed, and scrubbed, squeaky, clean, titled, got suffixes and prefixes for your name. So, you know, we can't possibly, you know, take anything that somebody who doesn't have a visible pedigree, we can't possibly take any of that seriously. And it's a damn shame because, see, you're in a position to be on the ground, and you are in the ground, you know what I mean, to experience as, you know, it's so wrong, and yet it's so impossible not to use expressions like a regular Joe. You're just a regular guy, just a regular American living his life, trying to do a business, and you have ups and downs. And you know, it reminds me of all this stuff that's going on with Donald Trump said something about grabbing women. Okay, like he's the only one to ever do that. I mean, it's just amazing the depth of the hypocrisy in this country. You got all these, you got everything from porn addicts to like graphic sex and violence, and then together on network TV. And oh, everybody's got to be free. We got gay churches, and we got gay marriage, and we got gay parades, and always some freak has got to be naked in the gay pride parade. You know, but that's just an expression of freedom, right? All of that. And
well, let's go a little. let's go a little further on that, though. Look what is happening in the current election cycle. Is somebody is challenging the status quo. He's challenging the establishment. Now, my perspective of the government has been for quite some time that we have a one-party system with two factions because they all are working in the same direction. They're just vying for credit, and I think that's more show than anything. But what he's done is burst that bubble open. So when we're talking about the government's presentation of Waco or the current election cycle, people tend to believe the mainstream media, and they are so prejudiced against Donald Trump. But it's even more demonstrated in the Republican Party, which in a sense is committing suicide right now because they want to retain the status quo and they won't accept an outsider. And a third-party candidate has no chance in hell because only two states, the electoral votes can be split. All the other states are winner take all. And so a third-party candidate has no chance of taking a state like California, which is the highest number of 55 electoral votes. It's an impossibility. But what's going on right now is giving us a picture of the workings of a system that has controlled us through the media. They're a team that work together we've got a fifth column in this country, but it's not coming from a foreign country. It's coming from our own government. I guess that's the best way to put it. We have a fifth column in this country that's supported by the government. So, alternate media like Caravan to Midnight are the way, and as more and more people are willing to listen to Caravan to Midnight or any other alternate media, but they begin to get a different picture. We're seeing that come out in Portland, Oregon, and we'll be seeing it coming out even more in Nevada very shortly with the Bundy-related situations. Now, there's Maxine Bernstein that twits the dealings in the trial in Oregon. I've seen a shift in her attitude. She's beginning to realize how bad things are. Initially, she was very pro-government in her position, and as subtle as it is, you can see a shift in what she's writing now, and see that she's beginning to have a little bit of sympathy for the people that are being persecuted, not prosecuted, but persecuted by the government.
Government persecution is a real thing.
Absolutely.
People don't buy it.
I've been watching it for, there's some other stories that I've covered indirectly. Everybody knew about Randy Weaver and what happened with him, but that was in August of 1992. It was before Waco. I became aware of it at Waco. Kirby Ferris wrote a book called Mountain of Lies, and he sent me a case of them and asked me to get them out to the press in Waco. And until I got kicked out of the press conference, I was handing them out, and then I was still doing it. I'd go down to the press area and get them out to people. But it was about what happened at Ruby Ridge. And what happened up there was the government wanted another informant to go into Richard Butler's, I think it was Richard, but Mr. Butler's church up there close to Sandpoint. And Weaver wouldn't do it, so the government sent a guy in with two rifles and asked Randy, who was a bit of a gunsmith, to cut the barrels down. So Randy cut them down. Now, they were just under the legal limit, and now the legal limit is in inches. And generally, when you look at something, there's a tolerance related with the lowest level of indicated. So 1 inch would be plus or minus a half an inch in either direction, and neither of them was more than a half an inch below the 1 inch, 16 inch, I think, is the figure. But then he was charged with making illegal weapons, and well, we know how that turned out. They wanted him to come in, and he refused to go in, or there was confusion over whether he knew when he was supposed to go to court. And then they come up to his place, and his son was out walking with the dog and heard a commotion and went down there. The agent shot the dog. his son shot at the agent, hit one of the agents, and the agents turned around and shot him in the back. The bullets entered in the back, and later they killed Vicki Weaver. They were trying to get an informant. Now, when I went up to Ruby Ridge and talked with some people up there, their estimation was over half the people in Butler's church were already informants because they'd been charged with crimes, and the only way they could stay out of prison was to become informants. So they didn't need another informant, but they wanted to control the entire situation.
Well,
they had to control it.
What do they need so many informants up there in that little part of the world? I mean, what's up with that? Must be one hell of a hotbed of activity of the criminal variety to justify needing that many. Inform on what?
Well, if we look back in our history, we had spies in foreign countries. We had spies involved in finding out what the enemy was doing, but we weren't spying on our own people. Now we're spying on our own people. This has become such a police state in this country that the government when we talk about Burns, we'll get into that. But it's become such a police state in this country that they've got to infiltrate anything that they can. I wrote an article a while back called Vortex, V-O-R-T-E-X. And by the way, if I mention any of these subjects, if you do a Google search with the word and then put outpost in it, that'll filter it down to get you close to my article. But based on my research over the last 20 years, I would say that any group that has any merit at all, that has any public face, will probably have at least 10% of the people involved in that group as informants.
Mm-hmm.
Or agents. Now, informants come in different characters. Some are charged with a crime and are willing to, adjudication withheld is a phrase that we find on court cases where somebody's charged with a felony, adjudication withheld, and they stay involved in the Patriot community, and they're informants because they're, as they were trying to do with Randy, not going to be prosecuted if they go along with the government. Then we have paid informants. We've got one that I've got an article ready to go out after she testifies in Burns, Oregon, where she called me about a week and a half ago and said, I've been called to testify. I was informing for the government, and they just offered her money. They paid her expenses, and at the end of the job, they gave her $3,000, all cash. No 1099s. Now, if I hired you and gave you $3,000, I'd have to file a 1099, but the government's exempt. This is black money. But it's their way of controlling things. So, it is a police state. And then if we look on the streets even, Guerno down in Tucson, Arizona, they go in with a military vehicle. They come in body armored, Kevlar helmets, full automatic weapons, and they shoot first and ask questions later. How can we deny that this has become probably one of the most powerful police states that's ever existed, far beyond what Germany had during the 30s and 40s? It's absurd. And we're convinced we're a free people. We're not a free people. We can't even put the light bulbs we want in or the flush toilets that we want in anymore. The whole thing's gone. The country I was raised in is gone. It disappeared, and I want it back.
Once upon a time, when somebody from the government, some government representative from some agency, some office, some department would come to talk to somebody, they immediately had respect because they were with the government. And the government was a bastion of ethics and accuracy and power that was wielded judiciously. But now it's almost like you're beholding the worst form of scum when you're confronted by these people. And that's a damn shame, because there are a lot of good people in government. You know that, and so do I. But the thing is that... I was going on and on about this where Langley is concerned, for example. CIA at Langley is so compartmentalized. This guy down here in office A-100 or whatever has no idea what the guy in A-101 is doing, and certainly not in B-101. You know what I mean? They don't know what they just do their little part of the gig, and then they report to a supervisor, and that supervisor reports to a supervisor or somebody in authority, and then he reports to somebody. So by the time it's all over with, it's like, oh, well, everybody in CIA is involved in illegal activity. It's like, no, not really. Maybe taken in whole as has been said on this program, everything they do is illegal, technically. But the individuals involved are not necessarily, by any means, bad people. I just wonder how these things, unless it's just another example of Wells's theory of compulsory collapse, I just wonder why these organizations and mechanisms deteriorate, and really more to the point, degenerate into things that are absolutely the antithesis of what they're supposed to be. You know, they're supposed to be protecting us, but they wind up oppressing us. And this has happened over and over in history, and I don't understand the mentality behind it. I don't understand how that happens, which makes me run to Scripture every time. There's usually an answer there.
A couple things we can look at. I was born in 1946, so, you know, by the 50s, I was reading Life, Saturday Evening Post, Look Magazine, and all this. And I still recall there are two types of cartoons, political cartoons, that always stood out. One was, and they all referred to Russia, obviously, the Cold War was beginning. Everybody was getting hero badges. It was just a white circle with a black border, and it said hero in it in handwritten letters. And they were giving them hero badges for just about anything. What did you get that hero badge for? I don't know, but I got it, and I'm proud of it. And the other one was the people standing in line. And I remember one of them where the guy walks by a long line, and he says, what are you standing in line for? He says, I don't know, but there's a line, so I thought I'd stand in it. Now, that's bureaucracy. They'll reward people who don't deserve it. If you look at, you know, these awards they give for heroism, they don't go to white males. They go to children, they go to women, they go to government employees. But they very seldom go to a white male who quite often stop a serious crime. And bureaucracy, it gets to the point, and what you mentioned, room 100 and 101, it becomes so cumbersome that it trips over its own feet. And then let's top that off with two other aspects of it. One is we've seen it in the Department of Defense for a long time. The political appointees become, with no experience in military affairs, for example, become Department of Defense Secretary. And then they hire underlings with political appointments with no experience. And so you get these people that have these theoretical ideas that... And we see it in the Western Lands movement, too. These people who live in cities are making decisions about the Western Lands. For example, with the Bundys going in during calving season, you know, let the cattle finish the natural process of calving before you try and arrest the cattle, which, you know, I look at it as they were arresting the cattle for trespassing on government lands. So the political appointees, and then we've got this final element, and this is the most destructive of all, and it's called the administrative agencies. They're extra-constitutional. In 1946, they passed the Administrative Procedures Act, and they created what they admitted in the congressional record to be a fourth branch of government, the administrative branch of government. Now, my Constitution does not have the fourth branch of government, but they promulgate rules, and they enforce those rules, and they have their own enforcement agencies. Prior to that, you know, the U.S. Marshal Service was about the only arresting agency in the federal government. And now, you know, Forestry Service can arrest you, and they're armed, and they're body armored on occasion. When we talk about Donald Scott, who was murdered in 1992, in October of 92, in his own home, we have... Let's see, L.A. Sheriff's Department, 13 deputies. We have two DEA federal, two Bureau of Narcotics state, two U.S. Forest Service people, three national parks people, two Jet Propulsion Laboratories people. We've got these various agencies involved in going and raiding this guy because they think marijuana is on his property. And this information came from a still unidentified informant who claimed that there were over 300 marijuana plants growing on Scott's 600-acre farm in above Malibu, surrounded on three sides by, you know, state or national parks. And so they go in on this raid, and they never did find even a marijuana seed, but they shot him. He came out to see if it was burglars when his girlfriend called him. He came out with his pistol in hand. He was in his underwear. He came out. They said, put the gun down, and the reports say he was dropping his gun down, which motion down. He didn't say it was pointed at the agents, but two of the L.A. sheriffs shot him and killed him right there, and they wanted land. They wanted this land to be confiscated because there was marijuana on it. It was an unidentified informant. Now, how can you reconcile that with what we should have in this country?
You can't.
I mean, what happened in the old days of knock on the door and say, hey, well, David Koresh, you know, he came to the door. He opened the door. But then he saw all these guns pointed. He heard guns fired when they killed the dogs. He went back in. They shot at him, hitting him in the side. And in reports from the Davidians, the inside of those two metal doors, the front doors, looked like the old graters, you know, the old metal graters with the real sharp edges outside that you wouldn't want to rub your hands against. And they walked away from that door whenever they got near it. It was so shredded with shards from the bullet holes. That's the America we've got now.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That, you know, Donald Scott, I didn't, and Randy Weaver I knew about briefly from Kirby Harrison, hearing about it, but got more detail later, and eventually they got the $3.5 million settlement that his daughters, his children did, or his daughter. And but Donald Scott, because of my appearance in Waco, I was on radio, over 60 radio shows during the course of my stay in Waco, and then the calls to and talk about Waco around the country afterwards, that somebody sent me the Ventura County District Attorney's report on it, Mike Bradbury. In fact, about 3 years ago, Mike Bradbury contacted me, and he said, I don't have a copy of my report. Can you get me a copy of it? And it's posted on the page. If you search Donald Scott Outpost, you'll see his report. But the event took place in Ventura County, California. And if you look at the list of players, nobody from Ventura County was included in the raid. So they didn't even recognize the jurisdiction of Ventura County. Maybe they figured he was honest, the Ventura County was honest, and they wouldn't be able to pull this scam off to try and steal Scott's property if they contacted the jurisdictional authority, the sheriff or the district attorney in Ventura County. So Bradbury in his report kind of, he tells everything they did wrong, but he kind of excuses them at the end. And, you know, so even though it came after the fact, this was the first land grab I'm aware of. The government's mastered that aspect. They did want the land at Waco, apparently, but Waco was a little different beginning. The name of the operation was Showtime. We know that on March 11th, the ATF was going to before the budget committee to ask ask for the funding to put together a national hit team. I call it a hit team. I don't recall what they call it, but it was kind of like a SWAT team. But they wanted to train from various offices around the country these people in SWAT tactics. And they wanted the funding for it. And what they called, they had Florida, they had Georgia, they had people from all over the country come together in the BATF teams, that the initial team as well as the subsequent additions to that team from all over the country. So they were looking, their purpose in going there was, I guess they thought these people on a Sunday, these religious people who actually their primary day was Saturday, Seventh-day Adventists, but they would just submit. They'd put their hands up and come out, and this would be proof that we need this national BATF SWAT team. And that seems to be the motivation behind the whole thing. And, you know, nearly 100 people died as a consequence of that. But the government could care less. They lied their way out of it. They ended up firing two BATF agents who were going to threatened to go public. They rehired them and kept them on until they got to retirement. they paid these guys not to tell the truth about what happened in Waco. And interestingly, too, an incident, I met a lot of press in Waco. CBS had sent a producer up from Miami with one of his reporters to take his tour of duty in Waco. And circumstances, I ended up having dinner with them one evening. And I said, Charles, why don't you tell the truth about what's happening at Waco? And he said, well, Gary, I've got a wife and two kids. And they don't have a standard. They don't tell us what to say, but I go to cocktail parties. And, you know, the people above me kind of give me an idea that those cocktail parties, what they're willing to do and what they're not willing to do. And if I want my job, I've got to do what they want me to do. And then he went on to tell me about a guy that had graduated from video school at Miami-Dade Junior College, and he'd come to work for CBS down there. And he did a bang-up job. He did three stories in his first week. They had all five W's, which we very seldom see in news broadcasts anymore. Who, what, why, where, when. They were excellent, but they weren't what the network wanted. So the guy, he was on probation, so they dismissed him. He did five stories. They aired none of them, and they dismissed him because he wasn't putting the bias on that they wanted, I suppose. He didn't go into detail. So we've got a picture there of how controlled the press is. It's like ticket quotas for cops. You know, they had to do away with the quotas, some 20, 25 years ago. But every cop knows if I give more tickets, I'm more likely to get a promotion. So it's kind of an unwritten law.
Sure.
And it is in the mainstream media, too, that you do what we want or else. Two people were kicked out of the Waco press conferences. The first one was Louis Beam. He was kicked out for asking the question, is what we're seeing here in Waco the evidence of the coming police state? They didn't answer him. Whoever was, it was before Ricks was there. Whoever it was nodded to a couple of Waco PDs, and they came over and, I'm going to say, at gunpoint, even though their guns weren't drawn, at gunpoint, they removed Louis Beam from the press conference, never to return. So he got his answer. It was just wasn't a verbal answer. It was a police state, and he was removed from the freedom of the press in the press conference. I'd been in a couple press conferences. I'd only asked one question. I asked if the Red Cross would be allowed to provide food and medical supplies to the people that were holed up inside of Mount Carmel. And, we can't do that. And then I called the Red Cross, and they said, it's a crime scene. We can't go in there. But then an incident happened on March 21st, and on the 22nd, when I went to the press conference, Mr. Hunt, you're not allowed in here. Why? Well, we don't like what you're doing. I said, well, what am I doing? I'd gone down to the press center, about a mile from, three quarters of a mile from the Mount Carmel Center. But they didn't like me, so I couldn't go to the press conferences. I had two or three meetings with them, and finally, on the fourth one, the final day, I went up to the press conference, and Linda Smith, I think was her name, Waco PD, she's the one that buys the donuts and coffee to give to everybody. And, you know, Waco PD was in charge of setting up the press conference. And she said, Mr. Hunt, you can't come in. And I said, why? She said, Mr. Hunt, it's their party and you're not invited. So that's freedom of the press in this country. If you defy that, you're out. You know, the freedom of the press doesn't extend to you. And am I pressed? Well, they tried to dispute that. Are you a member of the National Press Association? I said, no, do I have to be? And they couldn't answer that. Well, what have you done? So I gave them copies of the two papers I'd published, and they couldn't dispute that I was pressed. But they can dispute my right to even go in the press conference when I never created a disturbance. I didn't do anything like what Louis Beam did. But that's the way it works. You know, the press is absolutely controlled. Now, like I said earlier, this whole thing about Trump is beginning to demonstrate that. Why such a big issue over something, some locker room talk, something probably any alpha male in this country has said somewhere along the line, And women I know talk about men with the same regard. They talk about both the front and the back of men, the ass and the other end, you know, openly in their conversations. Women talk. So it's nothing new, but the press acts like this is a sin. And so they're playing along with the destroy Donald Trump, and as are the Republicans who are not going to vote for Trump. You know, they're committing suicide in the party. So I don't know. Where do we go from here?
You know, I don't know. It's amazing how I've heard a couple of those conversations over the years myself where the girls didn't think I was listening. I was like, oh, my God. I thought we were naughty. I thought we were raunchy. Wow, we got nothing on these gals. Nothing whatsoever.
That's right.
And, you know, when they return to the party or whatever, it's like they're just as ladylike as they can be. But I'll tell you what, you catch them off camera, they'll give you an earful, take the green off your teeth, you know.
Well, I had a few that I met over the years that were willing to talk to me about it. You know, I got along with them quite well, and so they told me what these conversations were. Generally, it's a group of girls, like a secretarial pool or some sales girls who work together. When they get together and go out drinking or something, they're far worse than the men.
I'm telling you. But the thing that's funny is how all of a sudden everybody straightens up. Everybody straightens up, so on their very best behavior, like they've never done anything. And you see the little halos appear over their heads. And they're just like, oh, he said something about what? He did. And here's the other part. Speaking of the part. First of all, we're missing. This is a component that everybody knows. There are a few naive women out there, young women usually. Maybe even some mature women. Who would not... who would just be absolutely horrified to be touched. But the first question is, what are you doing there? Number two, if something like that happened, did you report it? Did you slap anybody across the face? Did you file a lawsuit? No. No, none of that happened. It's just like that deal with his taxes. You know, it's like, I don't think he's been indicted for income tax evasion. No. But they want to, but he doesn't pay taxes, and it's like, okay. So I don't understand the dual mentality. I know it exists, but I don't understand why it exists.
It's an intentional bias, and it's to support the status quo, the establishment government that we have. That what was this recent one about Hillary that keeping us unaware? You know, one of the emails that was released, she was talking about keeping the American people unaware of things. And that's the government. They've got two faces. They've got the one they present to the public. We, you know, read my lips, no new taxes. He gets in office and we get new taxes. You could call it a secret government with a public face.
Yeah.
And let's look at the first Tea Party group. I think 80 went in, 80-some went in Tea Party. And there was a rather interesting article I read where they interviewed one of the guys that ended up voting for, I forgot what was, renewal of some bill. And they interviewed him, and they said, well, you were elected by the Tea Party, and you were opposed to that. And he said, well, when we got to Washington, we were invited to luncheons, we were invited to all these things, and you know, we were treated like we were members of the family, buddy, buddy, and all this. And so we felt that we just had to go along with them. So about 2/3 of the original Tea Party group that went up there turned against the Tea Party their first couple months in office. So there's a camaraderie. And I would expect that a lot of it has to do with the old J. Edgar Hoover, that they've got a file of bad things that people have done, and they probably threaten exposure. I wouldn't doubt it, the way we see things work, that they're actually blackmailing these people in a sense, that not for money, but for favors, blackmailing them to go along with what the government wants, with the party line. And they'll make exception if it's going to be a tough vote for him to get reelected. But, you can vote against it because you got a tough road against the Democrat down there or against the Republican down there. So they'll make exception, but they always have the majority. And then you've got the what I call green mail. The government, federal government, uses money. They give the schools, the cities, the counties, the police, and everybody else. But Back in 1980s, during the gas shortage, when Drive 55 came into being, the federal government, with the Federal Highway Transportation Trust funds that they give to the states to maintain the roads that the federal government built, they had a policy that there were going to be three readings in the major cities to see, make sure that people were driving under 60 or 62, but the average had to be down low enough. And Miami, in the first two visits, was way over the average, and so they were looking at losing their funding. And I would say it's probably political that they finally decided the third day that we were going to evaluate the traffic in Miami was going to be on Super Bowl Sunday. And that brought the average down to about 55 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour, because, you know, the freeways were jammed down there. But that's the green mail. You do what we want. The Crime Control Act of 1994, cops on the street, if you remember that one. Basically, the cops on the street had to do with little towns need a new cop. We'll give you a new cop. We'll pay his full salary first year, three-quarters of salary second year, half salary third year, quarter of salary fourth year, fifth year you're on your own. However, we will teach you how to use asset forfeiture to recover the cost of that new policeman. So they get the money, and then they're bound. Their agreement, they're bound to the Department of Justice to receive those funds. That is green mail, what's being taught in schools, Common Core. They'll lose their funding if they don't teach Common Core, if they don't teach what the government tells them to do. And as everybody really knows, they're not teaching students to learn anymore. They're teaching them how to pass those tests so the school looks good. So it's not the education you and I got. It's the education the government wants to get. And I think Hitler would be quite proud of the educational system we've developed.
Wow. I'll tell you what, why don't we... let's just pause for about 5 minutes. You can have a little smoke there. Enjoy that cigar for about 5 minutes. We'll resume, okay? We'll carry on in just a few minutes with our guest, Gary Hunt. And we'll talk about, I want to talk about this thing in Harney County and everything with the Hammonds and the Bundys and all this. What a mess. And isn't it funny how much of it can be linked back to some sort of activity in the Clinton Foundation? Isn't that strange? Coincidence? No, not really. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.